Parents, you can help me on that children's sermon because I know that was kind of a heavy one. But if you go home today and talk to your children about your ministries and about their ministries, that would really go a long way to helping them understand what I was trying to say this morning. Can you help me? My husband has cancer. I don't know what to do, so I've started calling churches. We had a benefit dinner in December, but we still have so many medical bills. We also just had our fourth child 6 months ago, and two of our children have special needs, epilepsy and autism. I've called many churches. None of them can help. Most won't even talk with me. Some just hang up. I just want help publicizing our GoFundMe account. Friends, this has scam written all over it. Randomly calling churches, playing the cancer, new baby, and special needs cards, not to mention the Trump card, no churches will help us. She even started crying on the phone. But I listened. She mentioned an article had been written for their local newspaper about her husband's condition and the benefit dinner they planned. I asked if there was someone I could speak with, a chaplain or social worker at the hospital where her husband was receiving treatment. No, but there was a caseworker at Catholic Social Services who would corroborate her story. So, if her story checks out, what should I do? What would you do? Does it make a difference that she lives in Ann Arbor? Or that her family is receiving public assistance? Or that they will have no way to pay us back or pay it forward for a long time? Or that her name is Aziza and her family Muslim? What should I do? What would you do? Now, this isn't my first rodeo. I was ordained in 1992, but have been active in ministry since about 1985 and around church folk all my life. I know what I should do, and I know what you would do. Ministry isn't rocket science. Most of you, 9 out of 10, would say, "What's the question? The man has Hodgkin's disease. The family has real needs. Their story checks out. The money was given to help people. Jesus is pretty clear when someone asks for help. Help. Why wouldn't we help?" The good news is your pastors think like most of you do. If someone is in need and their story checks out, we will help where we can. Sometimes we work with HelpLink or another agency. Sometimes we do the heavy lifting on our own. But if we can help, we do, because that is what Jesus would have us do. The challenge is the small group of you, 1 out of 10. That's probably too high a number. The challenge is the handful of you who would be angry with us for helping. I'm not talking about folks who say, "Well, have you thought about this? Or did you look into that?" Or even those who say, "Maybe you should have done it this way." That kind of constructive feedback is welcome and helpful. I'm talking about the people who might become belligerent with us because we help someone in Ann Arbor when there are poor people living in Traverse City. Or we help someone on welfare when we should only help those who help themselves. Or because we helped a Muslim, and God knows what they'll do with the money. Thankfully, we don't have many of those folks. We are blessed with a congregation who, by most accounts, are gracious and generous beyond measure. Our sheep don't bite. But in too many flocks, they do. Some are even carnivores. Because of them, clergy killers, they're called. Too many newly ordained pastors leave ministry before God's work is done. Too many pastors' marriages end in divorce. Too many pastors take their lives. Too many pastors' children end up broken. We make light of the prodigal PK, pastor's kid. But there is a reason there are so many. And their pain is real. Even though we don't have many biting sheep, just a few who nibble, I'm sharing Aziz's story and how some might respond to let you know Isaiah's experience is lived out by many pastors, even today. We have been called and equipped by God, yet too often feel we labor in vain. So we labor, if we continue to labor at all. We labor in the hope God's faithfulness will bring meaning to our work. Our reading from Isaiah will raise more questions than we can answer. Who is speaking in this servant song? Is the servant an idealized Israel? Or is the servant a prophet who speaks to an exiled Israel on the Lord's behalf? Or perhaps this passage is truly prophetic and speaks, as Calvin and others have suggested, to the work of Christ. In his commentary on Isaiah, Calvin writes, after having treated of the future deliverance of the people, he comes down to Christ, under whose guidance the people were brought out of Babylon as they had formerly been brought out of Egypt. Calvin concludes, the author could only be speaking of Christ as the suffering servant, because they would scarcely have hoped that the Lord would deliver them if they had not placed Christ before their eyes, by whom alone desponding souls can be comforted and strengthened. For from him they ought not only to expect eternal salvation, but ought equally to expect temporal deliverance. Now I'm going to hear from a few of you, in a good way, for leaping to Christ from Old Testament prophecy. Like me, you were taught to let the Hebrew scriptures speak for themselves without jumping too quickly to Jesus. Nevertheless, Calvin has a point. Salvation comes through Christ alone. Okay? Christ dwells with God through eternity. Okay? Therefore, Christ has been part of any saving act God has performed. Whether we're speaking of the Exodus from Egypt, the return of the exiles from Babylon, or the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, they are all part of God's one great work of salvation. For us to hear the words of Isaiah, not as a lesson in the history of Israel, but as a new and living prophecy for our time, is appropriate, even suggested by the text itself. Isaiah has a clear sense of his God-given call and the gifts he was given to do God's prophetic work. The Lord called me before I was born. While I was in my mother's womb, he named me. He made my mouth like a sharp sword. He made me a polished arrow. God said to me, "You are my servant, Israel, in whom I will be glorified." Isaiah's mission is first to call God's people back to Jerusalem from their diaspora in Babylon. Isaiah is called to restore Jacob to God and to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the survivors of Israel. Though Isaiah questions his ability to fulfill God's call, believing he has labored in vain and spent his strength for nothing and vanity, Isaiah entrusts his labor to God. "Surely my case is with the Lord, and my reward with God." What is vanquished Isaiah's reward for his faithful work? More work. God says, "It's too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the survivors of Israel. I will give you as a light to the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth." Though Isaiah believes he has labored in vain and spent his strength for nothing and vanity, because he entrusted his work to God, God has given Isaiah a share in God's work to bring salvation to the end of the earth. Speaking truth to power, Isaiah was abhorred by the nations and had become the slave of rulers. But God has other plans for this failed prophet. Kings shall see and stand up. Princes, they shall prostrate themselves because of the Lord, who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel, who has chosen you. Do you hear why Calvin hears Christ in this passage? Though he is called by God, Isaiah is not Christ. Though Isaiah is a servant, Isaiah is not the servant. Christ is the servant who restores Jacob and Israel and brings God's salvation to the end of the earth. But in his prophetic calling, Isaiah has been given a share in the servant's work. Entrusting his work to God's faithfulness, even when it seems he has failed miserably, Isaiah also receives a share in the servant's reward. Wednesday night, Jose, Melissa, and I received an email from a member who works with HelpLink. He shared one of the success stories our congregation helped make happen. It's always a joy to hear the seeds we plant have borne fruit. Thursday evening, Margie and I heard a story about a pastor who retired after 50 years of ministry in the same congregation. Hundreds of local dignitaries and well-wishers had gathered in the sanctuary. The person telling the story discovered the pastor in the garden and mentioned all of those gathered to celebrate the occasion. But they don't know the burdens I carried, the pastor said. Friends, there is no life like ministry. Ministers share life with people at their best and their worst. Ministers receive grace beyond measure and cruelty we don't deserve. Sheep can bite. But what I hope you hear in my words this morning is this. Our life and work, our ministry, is really no different than yours. You have your own joys and challenges, times when you feel so close to God, and times when you feel so alone. People who have loved you more than you deserve, and people who have no clue how hurtful they have been to you. You will wonder, like Isaiah, if it hasn't all been in vain. But I am here to assure you, entrust your cause, your life and ministry with God. And like Isaiah, you will be rewarded beyond measure. Because the Lord, who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel, has chosen you to serve Christ. And serving Christ is its own reward. Thanks be to God.